Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Veterans in Ag podcast, brought to you by AGD Consulting. I'm your host, Mike DeSop, and here we explore the stories and insights from the military veteran and supporter communities who are leading the way for vets in agribusiness, ag tech, and agripreneurship. We swap stories, talk ag, and show how the grassroots nature of the ag community can be a natural fit for the military veteran. Quote, consistency is a huge problem with biologicals. It works one year, it doesn't work another year, it works over here, it doesn't work over there, end quote. This quote is from our guest on the podcast this week, and he's referring to the early frustrations and struggles with biologicals, where it was extremely difficult to consistently produce a product with a living organism as the primary benefit. Our guest this week is Eddie Mejia, CEO for Earnest Ag, an ag biotech startup developing a variety of organic microbial products that help farmers provide plant nutrients and protect against disease. Eddie is a U.S. Army telecommunications veteran with a background in computer engineering, who managed to find his way into this niche world of microbials after meeting his co-founder at a university startup program. This type of business partnership is not uncommon in the world that I frequent, where veterans find the right resources and partners and build something with a bigger purpose in mind. Have a listen as this young man from the suburbs of Chicago with parents from the agricultural epicenter of Colombia makes his way into the world of microbial production, how their product is attempting to stand out in a saturated marketplace, the logistics of keeping a living organism alive on a seed as a coating, and how for Eddie and his team, COVID turned out to be good timing.
Grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. I joined the military in 2008. So I was in the Army for 6 years, deployed to Afghanistan and Iraq. And I got out in 2014. Went straight to do my undergrad in computer engineering at the University of Illinois at Chicago. And then I went on to the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign to do my master's of business administration. There is where I met my co-founder, Dr. Gabe Price. And Dr. Gabe Price's story is way different. So he grew up in the farm community of Illinois in the Quad Cities. He was going to do pre-med and then hated it. And his advisor's like, hey, you should go to Michigan State and check this research. So it was researching microbes on prairie lands and farmlands to compare to see which one's better at kind of growing plants. And so he ended up loving it. And then he went to do his PhD at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign doing microbial ecology. And so him and I met when I was doing my master's at a startup accelerator called iVenture. It's the University of Illinois' startup accelerator, student startup accelerator. I was running my second business at the time. I met Gabe and he was like, "Hey, smart, you're talking about the opposite of me, long hair, sandals, shorts." He was like, real science guy. So I was like, man, this guy's smart. And like when he speaks, it's very eloquent, very intelligent. And I was like, man, this guy's smart. I kind of want to work with this guy. And, you know, fate has it, end of 2018, he was like, hey, I need somebody to help me run this. I kind of asked the cohort we were in. And I said, hey, Gabe, I'm happy to try. I don't want nothing. Let's take a year, see how we work well. Let's see how we work. And 6 years later, here we are running Earnest Agriculture.
Yeah, there's a lot to cover in those 6 years. But tell us what you did for the Army, first of all, so we can sort of set that up.
Yeah, I was a 25 Bravo. So I did IT specifically, but I did everything from radio, satellites, running network cable. You name it. Anything that has to do with communications, I touched, basically.
Got it. Because that was my next question, which was what brought you into computer engineering following that? But it sounds like that passion sort of started in the military.
Yeah, I always wanted to create. So, you know, I always wanted to create something I really like. I really love technology. And so that MOS made the most sense for me, where I could spend time in the military and continue kind of going towards a computer engineering degree. And so I would say that it was more of, you know, IT is more like fixing things, and then computer engineering adds on to actually repairing and creating.
Had you not met Gabe at school, where do you think you might have ended up?
Well, you know, what's funny is I wouldn't, if you would ask me back then, would I be in agriculture? I'd be like, there's no way. So I'm like, I mean, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, so it was like, you know, there's no, I never saw farmland really.
Right.
The only kind of touch of farmland I did see was when my parents took me to Colombia. So both my parents are from Colombia, and my mom's dad was actually a pig farmer there. So he also did some construction materials. So I saw, you know, we were feeding the pigs, and then I actually saw one time where he shoved one of the pigs in the back of a pickup truck to go sell it. So it was funny, you know, you've seen that. But and my, you know, my mom and my dad, they grew up in Palmira. Like the Palmira is like Colombia's agricultural center. So that's where they grow basically everything in Colombia.
Okay.
And so they came from there, but they never really introduced me to agriculture or farming.
Yeah.
And funny enough, my mom also took me in 2006. We went to give presents to the less fortunate in Colombia. Mm-hmm. And it happened to be in sugarcane fields, you know, so, you know, mm-hmm. I saw, you know, the kid, the poverty, but I also saw farming there, like a whole different light. I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. And then, And then of course, in Afghanistan, you see, you know, they're growing poppy fields. And so just kind of, you know, it was little bits and pieces.
Right.
I don't know if it was like the world telling me something like, hey, just kind of put this in your purview, or maybe it's me just making the journey up.
Did your parents come over with you to immigrate here to the U.S. or was it prior to you?
No, they both actually met, you know, they're both from Colombia, but they both met here in Chicago. And then I was born, me and my brother, which also was, my brother went to West Point actually, and he also served 6 years. We were both, born in Chicago, in the Chicago area, so.
Got it.
So they were born in the same country, but met in a different one, so.
Do you guys go back somewhat regularly?
My dad does quite well. He has an apartment. He has a apartment in Medellin, so he does go to Medellin quite a bit. But they definitely, both of them came from way different families. So
my dad, gotcha.
You know, funny story. My dad's mom was actually an accountant for the cartel back in the day. So
oh my gosh, really? I was just gonna say it's a different place than when the FARC were running things down there. That's absolutely crazy, man.
It was crazy. I think my grandma never knew that until like recently. I'm like, what the hell?
So, yeah, right. What are you doing, grandma?
My dad only had, so he was him, his brother and sister. My mom had five siblings, so her and five siblings.
Wow.
All girls. So he was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Jeez. So you meet this guy, Gabe, at school. You're immediately impressed with who he is. You're just coming out of some time in the technology space in the Army. You sort of watch what he's doing. At that point, I mean, did you know much about his work before he asked you from the accelerator cohort to come support?
No, actually, I mean, I knew a little bit. I knew he was doing something with, at the time when he first started, it was about soil. So he was trying to use earthworms, like regular composting, and then use earthworms and then apply microbes to the soil. And so the idea was that the earthworms would help kind of inoculate some of the microbes into the soil. And so we can package the soil up and sell it. And so basically that first year, the first, I remember like being clear, it was the University of Illinois has a dairy farm. And so there was, they let us come on there and put our machine and test some of our composting. And so I remember putting 5 gallon buckets, shoveling manure into it. And so this is my first experience with manure. Right. And so I'm like, what the hell am I doing?
Right. Right.
Like, I mean, the stink of manure is like a whole different animal. So we ended up putting in 5 gallon buckets and walked it up. I think it was maybe like 20 feet or something, and then we had to lift it up into this machine that looked like a spaceship. And so it had like we would pump air through it, so it was aerated.
Okay.
So we would, well, we would mix it up with I think peat moss at the time, and then we'd put it in the machine. And so it was kind of like testing to see that we can actually works and what measurements we need to do. So it was a lot of manual work that first year.
Yeah. So manure and peat moss into this aeration machine, and then that's what you were then going to add to fertilizer and then sort of remix.
Yeah. So our plan was to add the microbes, and then it'd be, you know, it'd be better than the current soil products because we would have microbes in it,
okay.
Microbes that were alive. So that was kind of what we started with. I would say the 2018, 2019, and then basically, well, 2019, 2020, 21 is when we were kind of doing proof of concept for the soil. Then, you know, we got a customer, we had a distributor that was working with us, we had sales there, but, I soon realized that, you know, the soil is very, the very tight margins. And so there's a lot of labor cost, and we saw and kind of started thinking about, is there a better way to deliver the bacteria, instead of putting it in soil? And there was a lot of money that they required. It was a lot of upfront. And so, where we landed on was on seed coatings. So we would apply to agriculture specifically, and there was a big opportunity there. And yeah, so in 2022 is when we moved to a facility in Rantoul. Because at the time, at the end of 21, we're like, all right, we proved the soil manufacturing. So we were like, okay, now let's move to a facility. So I was looking online. I'm like, man, these places are expensive. This is not going to work. The unit economics is not going to work. Luckily, there's an old Air Force base, which is kind of crazy because, you know, I was an Army, and then that was an Air Force base that mm-hmm. basically they closed down in Rantoul. They closed down the Air Force base, and they had a bunch of buildings that the village was basically auctioning off so they can build economic value. So there was a building there. It was very affordable. And so we went to the village. We're like, hey, can we get this building? This is what we're doing. And then we went to the city hall, pitched our idea, and they're like, okay, yeah, that's fine. You can have that building. So it was 50,000 square feet. So this is like massive.
Whoa.
Yeah. And so, the kicker is it sits on a FAA, like there's an airport field nearby. And so all the buildings around that have to get approval by the FAA. So, so they can't sell the building unless the FAA approves it, the sale of the building.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so the village, you know, saw we were startups. We're like, oh, you can pay us $100 a month in rent until we get this approved. So without the village of Rantoul, we wouldn't have been, this company wouldn't have been a thing. Cause I mean, that space is perfect for what we were doing. So we continue doing the compost there in the facility. So we built, I think right now we have 18 machines. So these are big customized machines that we built that we can load with manure or the mixture. And then it basically aerates for 2 weeks, and then you can dump in and then sift it, package it up in bags, and then palletize it. So I think in total, we've sold, I mean, maybe $100,000 worth of soil in that business. But most of the research, I'm sorry.
Or a compost additive.
It was just straight compost. So, you know, right when COVID happened.
Got it. Good timing there.
Oh, I wish we would have been a year earlier. That would have been, but I think it helped us retarget for something for an opportunity that's bigger.
Right.
So, but 2020, yeah, COVID hit, and you saw like there was like no soil because everybody was doing compost at home and doing garden beds. And so, so we were like going into, and that's where we kind of raised our initial money. And so for the initial money that we raised in 2022, allowed us to build our lab out. So as soon as we got to raise that money, Gabe basically, we went on eBay and bought a bunch of used equipment that he needed. And we kind of, like, I always call it, he Frankenstein the lab together. So you go in there, you're like, what the hell? When the hell did we get this? So you just see like these old equipment. They're like, what the hell? And I'm always impressed because he was able to do so much with just so little. And it's kind of, you know, it talks about, you know, billion being really crafty and being very resourceful. So, we had built the soil was, we were focused. I was focusing on it with another partner that we were working with. And then Gabe was working in the lab, figuring out the microbes, pulling it out. This was 2022. So, and 2022, basically, we spent isolating almost, I think it was at that point, 3,000 microbes or 2,000 microbes from prairie lands. So he went across Illinois, we got permits from the state, and he went out there, got soil samples. And it's a funny thing, it was hunting season, so he had to wear a flag so he didn't get shot. So
yeah, sounds about right.
So he went back, he came back, we did that. Basically 2022 was figuring out, building out catalog of microbes. And then in 2023 is when, like, okay, investors and the government grants were like, you need to do field trials. You need to show us that your product actually works. And then we were out. Luckily, this is another lucky, next to the building, we had a big plot of land. So we ended up tilling it, and then we planted the seeds by hand. And I mean, we had 272 plots, 6x6.
Corn,
soybean, our treatment. It was corn and soybean. We had our treatment, a control, which is bear seed. And then we had a disease competitor and a nitrogen competitor for biologicals. And so that was our first year of trials. And it was, you know, we really got down and dirty. So.
Yeah, I want to talk about some of those trial results, because I've seen some on your website, but I want you to sort of go through them a little bit. Look, I'm not incredibly familiar with this idea of microbial seed treatments, but before we jump into that, I do want to ask, how differentiated is it of a product to have a compost with microbes added to it?
So the compost was, we never ended up putting the microbes in the compost.
Okay.
Yeah. So the compost was a separate, basically it was a separate business.
Got it.
That was a separate business. We kind of teetered that down so we can focus. So that one's just sitting there essentially.
Okay.
There's an opportunity to do that, but we just kind of sold that down, and really our focus is now setting the microbes via seed coating. And so, you know, you asked a good question there. So in biologicals, you know, you ask farmers, like, there's so many biologicals out there.
Yeah.
I think there was a 2,500 companies at once, and I think it went down to 1,200 because last year was like a super, super difficult for fundraising. And so a lot of companies had teetered down. I would say the problem with biologicals is, first, there was people in the garages, you know, mixing a bunch of stuff, and like, oh, I'm a scientist, I mixed this batch. And, you know, they would make, maybe they'll make a good batch one time, but then the next batch won't be the same as the previous. And so there was a lot, basically it was, I would say, compost tea, where you're just putting a bunch of microbes mm-hmm. together. And then some of them might be bad, most of them might be good, but you won't get the same results. And it dives down to why we're kind of differentiated in this space. Consistency is a huge problem with biologicals. It works one year, it doesn't work another year. It works over here, it doesn't work over here. And so with Gabe's experience, first at Michigan State University of Illinois, he built a platform that allows us to match different bacteria strains together. And this is innovative because, you know, some of the solutions, I would say on one side, you talk about the compost tea, where it's a bunch of mix of bacteria. And then the other side, you have, you know, biologicals with one bacteria focusing on one benefit. And I would say that we sit right in the middle, where we have a specific number of bacteria with a specific number of benefits. And so, and the benefits we focus on is basically three buckets. And bucket one is nutrient efficiency. And we focus then on nitrogen, phosphorus, iron. And then the next bucket is plant resilience, and we focus on drought tolerance and growth hormone. And then our last bucket is disease. So Pythium and soybean sudden death, some of the big ones we work there. And yeah, essentially we build, so when we get these bacteria from these lands, we, you know, in the lab, we figure out if they have any benefits, any of these, if they cover any of these buckets. And then, so we take, you know, this lab space, and then we put it into our database, and it allows us to determine which bacteria work well together. So
I have this vision in my mind of Gabe going out to the field and pulling soil cores, bringing them back, putting them under a microscope, and basically inventorying what's available. is that even close to how you'd sort of synthesize what microbes are out there in a living set of soils? And then that says they normally serve these purposes. And then what? It's a matter of seeing if it plays nice with microbe number two. I mean, help walk me through that process.
Yeah. So, you know, there's over 1 trillion species of microbes in the world.
Right. I mean, it's a huge number.
Yeah. We haven't even discovered like 1% of it. So it's like, it is a whole new industry. Like, we just figuring out fermentation for bacteria. So bacteria, we still, you know, this is still a whole new, ripe for innovation here. But essentially, you know, just, you know, the keyword, you know, like AI and machine learning, mm-hmm. they work on information. And so mm-hmm. we don't have any information on bacteria. And so essentially what we are is building the database of bacteria with, you know, with traits and information that we know that are important.
Okay.
A good way that, a good description is that, you know, Gabe, you know, that we've kind of talked about is, you know, you see a 6 foot tall high school player and you're like, man, this guy's going to be good at basketball. He is a monster. He's going to be doing 3 foot. But, you know, if you take a closer look, he might actually be better at being a lawyer. Like, he's one hell of a, you know, negotiator. And so, you know, it's really determining from the bacteria, not what it looks like they're good at, it's what they actually are good at, like specific bacteria. And are they good at actually doing nitrogen? Are they good at actually doing, you know, or nutrients or resilience or disease? And then really figuring out kind of that's stage number one. And number two is, you know, there's kind of three things that we look at is the conditions the bacteria thrive in, the mechanisms they use to benefit the plants, and then the resources they consume. So, you know, and the third one kind of gives you, so if you and me like pizza, you know, we probably won't work well together because then we're going to eat all the pizza and there's going to, so it's good that maybe you like, you know, hamburgers and I like pizza and then now we're eating different things. And now we build a good synergy. It's more complex than that, but that's at the bare bones. That's kind of what it is. And then it's better, you know, another thing is like, maybe, you know, karate and I know jujitsu. And so it's right. Good that we for mechanisms.
How do you find out what they're good at?
Through baby lab, they're called assays. So
yep.
For example, for disease, you do there's basically a plate and you put the disease in the middle and then you put the different bacteria on the outside. Uh-huh. And if the disease spreads over the bacteria, you'll see a ring around the bacteria, which says the bacteria can protect against the disease.
Okay.
And so that's essentially how you do the disease one. And
okay.
Yeah, and then the other ones are kind of different tests that they run in the lab.
But you guys have been doing this, I guess, somewhat long enough where there's maybe some tiny body of evidence that says these strains of bacteria we think are good at these things like nutrient or plant resistance. So let's start there. Or are you literally starting from a pile of soil and having to do each microbe's critical strengths, if you will?
Yeah, no, it, I mean, 2022 was just, we were picking bacteria from the dirt basically, and then cataloging, going through all the tests that we have. So it's kind of like a screening process basically for each bacteria. And then collecting all the information into the database that our algorithm uses. So, and then once we have the data for all these bacteria, then the algorithm determines like, listen, you will use these 8 bacteria and these 8 bacteria work well together. And so the next stage, so that's just like in the lab, we're like, okay, these will work together. But then the next stage is actually testing different combinations in the greenhouse. And that really tells us, that's another piece of information. So we take this information into the greenhouse and see which combinations actually really work well on increasing yield for the soybean or corn, which we're focused on. And essentially we take that information too, and we put it back into our database. So I would like to explain it. We're like we are like a manual machine learning algorithms. So instead of the computer doing it, we're actually doing it ourselves, putting it in the machine.
Got it. So you've now got a product, a seed coding product that incorporates 8 specific or unique microbes. Is that right?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. And from what I saw online, that coding is a powderized.
Correct, yeah.
So talk us through how you can have it be shelf stable long enough to feed.
Yeah, so there's different techniques that, you know, that, you know, different companies are exploring. It is, so in our product, we have the bacteria, we have the polymer that helps adhere the bacteria to the seed, and then the colorant.
Yeah.
So those are three, these are three kind of ingredients in our product. So the colorants, so you can see that it actually went on the seed, polymer helps attach to the bacteria, and the bacteria is our basically secret sauce. And basically the polymer and the bacteria is a kind of our secret sauce, and how, you know, what's really special. Because you can't just use, you know, the polymer is, you can't just get off the shelf and it's going to work. So there's a lot of tests that you have to do. And there's different ways, you know, you can do freeze drying, which is, you know, like, I don't know if you've seen, like, it was yeah. a big jump in like candy. They used to freeze dry a bunch of candy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's funny enough, we were able to go Facebook Marketplace. A lot of the people who were doing candies are now selling the machines because the hype is over.
Uh-huh.
Which is good for us because now we got cheaper machines. So but you know, that's one thing. And then the spray drying is another factor. So it's kind of determining which one can process the bacteria and keep the most alive at the end. And that is what we've been working on. So as of right now, we have a 14-week shelf life as a powder product. We're definitely trying to move that to 2 years. That's 2 years is like perfect. 6 months is what we need at minimum. That just helps us be more operationally efficient.
Mm-hmm.
So you have two shelf lives. So that's like in powder form, which is, I would say, is the easiest. The one that a lot of people, and we've also been struggling with, is on seed shelf life. You can put, so Bacillus is a very like common one. All the biologicals use Bacillus, and that one's very hardy. And so, you know, there's other companies that say that we have 2 year shelf life, but it's when you really try to do a combination of bacteria and have that shelf. That's where, you know, you're talking about a challenge. So, and like I said, Gabe is the smartest person I know. So he stays reading some articles and he's like, all right, I have an idea. And so, and he'd be testing. And so really the way he thinks is just crazy.
What's the advantage of the product already on the seed with a long shelf life, as opposed to just keeping the powder freeze dried by itself and treating on a batch by batch basis as a sale for that seed comes in?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, there, as you know, there's three applications. We can do seed coating, we can do foliar or in-furrow. Those are kind of the three ways that we can apply. And when we were thinking about this, it's like, what is easiest for the farmer? What would be like the last touch point where it's just a drop-in solution?
Yep.
And that is the seed coating. On top of that, it's, you know, it's where the bacteria is the most, it has a bigger chance of getting to the roots, I would say. You know, so when the seed germinates, you know, it really pierces that coating, and then it gets the bacteria gets put on the roots. The way I would say it is like, if you, you know, yogurt and kombucha is good for your gut, we're creating the yogurts and kombucha for the plant's guts, which is its roots. So that's the easiest way. Is not to say it's the seed coating is the hardest, because you have to see the compatibility with other seed coatings, but it is the easiest for the farmer, because they get the package and they just get the seed and they go ahead and plant. They don't have to do extra runs. They don't have to have different pieces of equipment. It is a drop in. Not to say that in the future we won't have in furrow and foliar, I would say those are easiest to create a product for, but the seed coating really gives us a really differentiator.
Are you coding in-house?
No, essentially how we would work, we would give the powder to the farmer or the retailer, and then they would coat with their machines.
Got it. Okay. So there's almost a decision. You just got the freeze-dried powder that your distributor, your seed distributor, or the customer, who are then coating once they purchase it and before they plant it.
Yeah. So sometimes farmers have the seed treaters, sometimes they don't, but the retailers usually do. Especially like for soybean, it gets treated at the retailer level.
Okay.
And then the retailer would give the farmer the coated seed. And sometimes, you know, the farmer and the retailer, I mean, it's good in agriculture, all good relationships. So they usually work together. For this first year though, we will be going out and coating the seeds for the farmers if they don't have equipment.
Got it.
But at least for this first year. For next year, we are going to solve that on seed shelf life, because right now for the on seed shelf life, we only have 5 weeks. So we definitely need to, that's for sure going to be solved by the next growing season.
Yeah. Right. Cause I was going to ask, like, what changes once, is there some sort of clock that starts, if you will, when you actually do the coating? It sounds like there is.
Yeah. That has been the biggest hurdle with biologicals. Like once you cut the seed, you know, that shelf life is not, you know, and when you come with chemicals are, you know, they have unlimited shelf life basically.
Right.
You can just apply and it works. But
right.
So, and biologicals, when you enter a new product and the systems are not built for them. So you're going to try to figure out how the hell, you know, either you change the systems or you make the technology work with the systems that you currently have. And so, you know.
Do you know why specifically that happens when you actually put that coating on the seed, that shelf life goes from, you know, 14 weeks down to 5?
I think my understanding is that the microbes don't have enough resources to survive. So after the four, so what feeds the microbes is when the plant is actually growing. So the plant actually extrudes sugars, and that's what the microbes eat. So if the microbes are just sitting on the seed, there's no sugars coming off, and so they don't have enough to eat. So you're basically starving them.
What are your early thoughts as to how you may go about trying to get this on seed coating thing figured out for next year?
Just different chemistries, working with different polymers, some polymer providers, working with our own kind of in-house to see what works the best.
Okay.
Yeah, just kind of tweaking the chemistry is essentially what we got to do.
To maybe like give it a layer of food?
It's more on how well the polymer can basically put the bacteria to sleep. So it's gotta really like, I would say put it like freeze dryer chambers. Like if we were to go to freeze dryer chambers.
Yeah.
They haven't figured out how to keep us alive after we go there, but basically essentially at the molecular level, trying how to do that, how to make sure the bacteria kind of freeze in their specific state.
So, you almost put them dormant again until you get them into a living soil situation, and then they.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, you're putting you're freeze drying it or spray drying it. So you're putting it to sleep. And so now it's like how stable. And then you're getting it, you're waking it up again. And then you're like, okay, go back to bed. And so now you're like, okay, well, you know, it's not. And then when you're waking up and going back to bed, you're like, well, you're not really going back to bed. It's not a freeze drying. You're actually just letting air dry. So really trying to figure out how you make that, how you make those little buggers stay alive long enough.
Yeah. I mean, this is such a new process for me, just this sort of understanding of keeping a living organism basically on a product and not have it start to do its biological nature until you want it to. has always been kind of an interesting, because I've always understood that microbes on products have shelf lives, and I've never really understood how you sort of control that shelf life until you want it to actually get going. So talk about some of your trial work.
Yeah, so in 2023, like I discussed, we wanted to prove that our approach works and then compare it to leading biologicals in the space. And so on corn, we saw a 7% increase and 6% increase in yield versus naked seed or bare seed. And funny enough, that 2023 was really, really hot year. It was super dry. And the two competitors, we had a disease competitor and a nutrient competitor, and they actually did a lot. Like, they brought down the yield up to 25%. And we contribute that to our product helping with stand count. So at the end of the trial, we had more, you know, we had more plants, and that allowed us to push more, bigger yields. And, you know, it really dives in back into things. So if, like I said, if you focus on one benefit, like nutrients, one benefit, then you're betting that the plant's going to need nutrients. Or if you
right.
bet on disease, you're betting that the plant needs disease. So by giving the plant, like a buffet of bacteria to choose from. So they can choose if they need nutrients or the resilience or disease. So those trials went really well. And those trials have allowed us to, you know, get investor interest, get government funding. And so, but the next stage was, okay, cool. You tried it in one plot in Illinois. So what? How do you know it's going to work everywhere? And so this past year, in partnership with AgLaunch, so AgLaunch is a farmer investment group out of
Tennessee. Yeah, I know them well. Yep, that's great.
We were in there in last year's? Yeah, we were in last year's batch. And so they've been a phenomenal partner in helping us really roll out our field trials to bigger market. So last year we did a trial with the University of Illinois. And then we did another, basically across five states, eight different locations. This was in Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Tennessee, North Dakota, and in Canada. We saw a 6% yield bump on soybean with an 87% win rate across the board. So really happy with those results. That was, again, control bare seed against the seed up with our product on top. And so now this year, so they're like, okay, now, you know, like they're always moving the goalposts, obviously. So now they're like, okay, well, does it work on top of other coatings? That's like another thing. How well does it work on top of other coatings? And how does it compare with other chemo? So another thing that we found interesting last year was our products, we compared it with two other leading fungicides. And this was the University of Illinois trial. And they were actually able to apply soybean sun and death. And our product compared at or above the chemical fungicides. Hmm. And then at the above, we were 5% better at protecting against disease. So
that's a big trial. Five states, eight locations to have that sort of efficacy return is, man, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, the main thing is the consistency. So I took those results to the American Seed Trade Association in December. Mm-hmm. So I was showing all the retailers, the corporations, like, look, this is our results. And so got a lot of good demand and feedback that they want to try our product for this upcoming growing season.
Yeah,
so,
no kidding.
So now we're like tripling what we did last year. And so it's like, oh man. So
is your product, are you marketing this as a biostimulant, just a straight biological? What are you guys thinking there, or what are you pursuing?
Yeah, so we have two products, which is our biostimulant we call Prairie Power, and then our biopesticide called Prairie Plus. And so the only difference between the two is one does disease defense. And so the biopesticide, we do have to get through federal Environmental Protection Agency regulatory approval. Mm-hmm. And so for that product, it's going to cost us $2 million and take 36 months. So
it's not cheap, man, from what I understand. That process isn't fast or inexpensive.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, Yeah, it's definitely some work, but you know, it does pay off in the back end. The big corporations do want to see products like these.
Right.
But the Prairie Power is the one we're rolling out this year to farmers. Okay. As of right now, we already have 550 acres committed.
And that Prairie Power one has all eight microbes.
Yeah, both products have eight microbes.
Both do. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. We found that at eight is like the perfect number before the productivity dies off. So eight bacteria at once is where it works the best.
Do you ever have veterans, either guys that you served with or other veterans, come across you and what you're doing and go, man, what is this exactly? And how do you kind of interact with veterans who are interested in finding out more about what you're doing?
Yeah. You know, especially like, you know, all the different networks I've been in, like, not a lot of people know about farming or agriculture. It's kind of like a hidden gem as well. They just know they go to the store, they eat, but they don't know what happens on the back end. So, you know, since I started, even my family, friends, all of like, oh, what are you doing with it? I didn't even know this existed. So, and then when it comes with the vets, you know, I have a good friend, Jack Clover with Micro MGX. He's also an Air Force vet. So it's funny, you're seeing other leaders in ag where both come from the background. So a lot of connection there. But when I talk to other military, you know, I kind of tell them what I'm doing and they're like, oh, okay, you're doing a startup and oh, that's interesting, and always willing to kind of help. And they, you know, sometimes they're interested, sometimes they're doing their own thing. So it just kind of really, I would say it's like totally, sometimes you don't even know. So
since I'm on this idea of farmer trial opportunities, are you familiar with the Farmer Veteran Coalition?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Any thoughts there about maybe linking up with those guys as trial partners if necessary?
Yeah, I was part of their newsletter every month, but it looked like they were more focused on getting veterans into farming. And it looked like it was more small scale. I haven't circled back because we weren't really focused on it, but you know, now that you bring it up, it's interesting to see if there's something that we can tap into there, especially, you know, the farmer community really respects veterans. That's definitely has helped me with closing with the sales I have.
Yeah, so for sure.
It builds up a really good foundation. So, you know, USA, America, number one.
Yeah. So they had this like whole homegrown by heroes product line. And I do believe most of their stuff is relatively small. I'm not sure what kind of scale you guys are looking for from trial this year, but I wanted to just put the thought out there because it came to mind.
Yeah, for this year, we're looking for farmers that are growing soybean that have about 1,000 or more acres.
And, okay.
We'd like in the Midwest, but we're open to, you know, to expand. So in the Midwest, we're Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Tennessee. Gotcha. We do got some in Nebraska, Kansas. So
got it. Okay. And then you guys are also nearing the end of a capital raise at this point with Harvest Returns.
Yes. Yeah. We are raising money with Harvest Returns. We're listed on their platform. I like working with them specifically because it's specifically focused with agriculture. Mm-hmm. And they focus on accredited investors. So there's a lot of crowdfunding platforms out there, but I really connected with Chris and his team over there. They're phenomenal. They've been phenomenal. The support they offer is just, you know, super great. And then I've talked to other founders. So before I came to that, I talked to other founders that were listed on the platform and they've had a great experience. So.
Well, Eddie, man, it's been a true pleasure. I wish you guys the best of luck. I think, you know, the path that you made from where you were to where you are today is, it's a unique one. And shed light on those unique paths that other veterans have carved. And so kudos to you, man, for being able to do that and for the success you've had already. To close us out, I want to give you the last opportunity to say, is there anything that I haven't asked you or that we haven't talked about that we should have?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important for, you know, veterans to understand that what they did in the military helps. So the resilience, the purpose, that has all been key factors into driving the success for Ernest and where I'm at today. So there's a lot of times where we're like, oh my, how are we going to make this happen? Or we're like, oh, we're going to run out of money this month. And then boom, you know, something happens. Or wow, just being creative. And so I think the military was definitely a stepping stone to that. And on top of that is all the organizations that, you know, support startups like us. We talked about Ag Launch, Grand Farms out of North Dakota, phenomenal program too. Indie Bio, New York, out of New York, phenomenal program. University of Illinois, Generator. I mean, there has been a plethora, 1871, Evergreen.
Yeah.
Plethora of those small groups that really kind of help, you know, people who want to get into startups or people who want to get ag. There's a bunch of programs out there. So I would just advise that you double check that there was some fraud out there, some programs that were asking for money up front, which that should never be the thing. None of these programs I've been part of ever asked for any money. It was free to participate, and they someone actually invested money in us. So those are the best programs, and that's how we got from zero to 100 really quick.
I like how honest Eddie is throughout this episode. When they realized that the margins were too tight in microbial enriched soil, they pivoted. He described how they managed to get a 50,000 square foot auctioned building from a former Air Force base for $100 a month. He talks about their early parts shopping days on places like eBay and Facebook Marketplace. He talks about isolating thousands of microbes individually, etc. Right? It was just so interesting listening to how scrappy Eddie and Gabe were and how they're continuing to work at all costs to make this company a reality. I mean, this is the American entrepreneurial spirit and dream embodied here in this example. Now, I'm not a wizard, right? If you haven't already figured that out in the world of microbials. But for me, this is the first time I've heard of AI being fed raw information about bacteria and their properties, and then using algorithms and machine learning to help put together these combinations of bacteria that are most likely to work well and produce a series of desired outcomes. This is what AI is supposed to do, right? Pattern recognition from large quantities of data. So I'm really excited to continue to follow Eddie and Ernest Ag and see where this use case leads them. If you're interested in contacting Eddie, you can find him on LinkedIn. You can also learn more about Ernest Ag by visiting their website at Ernest, that's ernest.ag. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Vets and Ag podcast, brought to you by AGD Consulting. If you enjoyed this episode and think other military veterans and supporters would benefit from these insights and stories, please give us a review and share on social media. You can also find previous episodes and learn more about AGD Consulting by visiting our website. Finally, if you have any recommendations of future guests who are military veterans or supporters leading the way in agribusiness, ag tech, or agripreneurship, please send them our way. I'm your host, Mike DeSau, and until next time, stay frosty.